One, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear reports from Brian Lynn, Dan Novak, Dan Friedel, and John Russell. Alice Bryant brings us a new edition of Ask a Teacher. We close with an American story. This week, it is after 20 years. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
The tragic events of September 11th, 2001 took place in just under 102 minutes. On that day, 2,996 people died in the worst terrorist attack in modern history. What followed was nearly 20 years of war in Afghanistan. The U.S. Department of Defense says there were at least 2,325 American military deaths. No one knows exactly how many civilians were killed. The Global War on Terror, as it was called, stretched beyond Afghanistan into Iraq and places as far away as Africa. In Iraq, the conflict killed nearly 4,500 U.S. service members and many thousands of civilians. On September 11, 2021, President Joe Biden is expected to try to mark the end of that period and America's longest war. Since withdrawing all troops from Afghanistan at the end of August, the Biden administration has sought to put the events of 20 years behind it. It has released many formerly secret documents about the September 11th attacks. It appears to have accepted the return of Taliban militants, the Afghan leaders pushed out by the U.S. invasion nearly 20 years ago. On Saturday, Biden will visit the three places that were attacked. New York City is where American Airlines Flight 11 crashed into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. 17 minutes later, United Airlines Flight 175 hit the South Tower. Biden will also visit the Pentagon, the headquarters of the U.S. Defense Department outside Washington, D.C. That is where American Airlines Flight 77 crashed 34 minutes later. Separately, Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris will pay their respects at a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. That is where United Airlines Flight 93 crashed. Jeremy Suri is a history professor at the University of Texas in Austin. The president is drawing a line under the last 20 years, he told VOA. And he's acting as a historian and saying we've ended an era, just like the end of the World War II era, and it's now time to make new decisions in the ways in which Harry Truman made new decisions after the World War II era. Harry Truman was the President of the United States from 1945 to 1953. Suri said historians understand why Biden is asking Americans to look forward and not back. I think we are in a different moment after the 2020 election, and we are in a different moment with the rise of China, he said. 20 years on, our challenge is different, said Deputy National Security Advisor Elizabeth Sherwood Randall. We have learned since 9/11 how to protect Americans from terrorism, she said, adding that those measures probably prevented another 9/11-style terrorist attack. Vanderbilt University historian Thomas Schwartz, however, does not believe we can easily call an end to the era, pointing out that it takes two sides to have a conflict. One side cannot decide alone to end it, he said. I think the words of President Biden and the deeds of a fixed time for withdrawal from Afghanistan were a mistake and were an error in judgment that I think could affect the United States over the coming years, he said. Norman Ornstein is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative public policy research group in Washington. He believes that Americans should look to history to understand our position. In 1983, President Ronald Reagan decided to withdraw American forces from Lebanon months after a bombing killed 241 U.S. service members. That decision, Ornstein said, shows the difference between the America of today and the America of past decades. We did not have calls for Ronald Reagan to resign or moves to impeach him, he said. Republican lawmakers have strongly criticized the U.S. evacuation from Afghanistan and President Biden. Ornstein said Reagan's actions in 1983 were not considered for political reasons, as almost everything is today. And that is a disturbing element here that actually is at least as unsettling in terms of where the country goes in the future as some of these other threats that we face, he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Nagla Bader did not talk about the September 11th terrorist attacks with her high school students last year. The New Jersey teacher was holding classes online because of the pandemic, and it was a discussion she only wanted to have in person. This year, on the 20th anniversary, and with the Afghanistan war ending, September 11th, or 9/11, is an issue she cannot avoid. She has questions she plans to ask students in her international diplomacy class. What do you know about 9/11, why it happened, and what happened afterwards? And how is it connected to Afghanistan? I think it's really important that teachers don't shy away from teaching about these things, Bader said. She is a co-founder of the organization Teaching While Muslim. Many educators worry about teaching anything that is considered political, she said. I think it's really unfortunate, Bader added, because there is so much misinformation and disinformation in the world. Today's students do not remember September 11th, but they have heard about it all their lives. Jennifer Greigel is a professor at Syracuse University in New York. She researches social media and the internet. She said that if students are not given factual information that helps them understand what happened and why, students could start to believe conspiracies. Theories that claim an event was a secret plan carried out by usually powerful people or groups. In the absence of information, people go online, Greigel said. Kathy Durham is a history teacher in the state of Nevada. She uses 9/11 to teach her high school students about primary sources. She shows her students documentary films and old news coverage. She also requires them to talk to adults who remember that day. Sometimes students claim the attacks were a government conspiracy. Durham said she pushes them to examine the truthfulness of sources and evidence. It's really, really a delicate thing, because my job is to teach kids to think and not tell them what to think, Durham said. Some schools teach about 9/11 around the anniversary or briefly discuss it in history classes. But the way the attacks are taught are often up to the teacher, even in states where 9/11 lessons are required. Teaching 9/11 has largely been memorializing the events versus really digging into the context of 9/11 and the ongoing sort of results of 9/11, said Jeremy Stoddard. He is a University of Wisconsin professor who has researched the subject. In the years immediately after the attacks, 9/11 was a very emotional subject for students. But with students now distanced from it, it can be difficult keeping students interested, said Anthony Gardner. He is the founder of the September 11th Education Trust. The organization recently released a plan to help teachers use 9/11-related lessons on the anniversary as well as throughout the year. Gardner, who lost his brother on 9/11, said it is important that students hear about people who died that day, related deaths that came later, and the lessons learned. Corey Winchester is a high school history teacher in Illinois. He tries to teach about 9/11 not just as a single event, but something that we're still interacting with. For some teachers, telling personal stories helps students learn the wide effects of 9/11. Liz Prince is having her fifth graders in Mississippi record a discussion with someone they know about a September 11th experience. Back in New Jersey, Bader plans to teach what happened and then have students explore the U.S. involvement in Afghanistan before 2001. She will also share her own experience when she was a student herself. Bader was 11 at the time and attending school. The World Trade Center's Twin Towers were visible from the school grounds. Her parents feared for her safety as anti-Muslim opinions grew after the attacks. She said her parents stopped her from starting to wear a hijab. She ended up waiting 10 more years before she covered her hair. I'm Dan Novak.
Police in Norway recently found a large number of ancient artifacts, including writing surfaces, originally made in the Middle East. Iraqi officials reported the missing items. A law enforcement organization in Norway that covers economic and environmental crime and the Norwegian Ministry of Culture worked together to find nearly 100 pieces. The items are from Mesopotamia and go back to the time of the Sumerians, who lived about 5,000 years ago in what is now Iraq and the Middle East. A Norwegian law enforcement spokesperson said the items were in a private collection. The Reuters news agency reports several people were questioned, but no arrests were made. The Norwegian organization that worked to find the items said they are important to worldwide cultural heritage. Experts are now examining the items so they can find out if they are real and where they came from. Police did not say why or how the items came to be in Norway. I'm Dan Friedel.
A team of Arctic researchers from Denmark say they accidentally discovered what they believe is the world's northernmost island. Northernmost is a term that means farthest to the north. The island is located off of Greenland's coast. At first, the scientists from the University of Copenhagen thought they had arrived at Udak, an island discovered in 1978. They arrived, instead, on an undiscovered island farther north. Morten Rasch was the group's leader. "We were convinced that the island we were standing on was Udak, which until then was registered as the world's northernmost island," he said. Registered is a term that means to be part of an official list. In a statement, Rasch explained, "When I posted photos of the island and its coordinates on social media, a number of American island hunters went crazy and said that it couldn't be true. Island hunters are adventurers who enjoy searching for unknown islands." The yet-to-be-named island is 780 meters north of Udak, an island off Cape Morris Jessup, the northernmost point of Greenland and one of the most northerly points of land on Earth. The island was discovered as a result of moving ice. It is about 30 by 60 meters in size and rises to about 3 to 4 meters above sea level, the university said. The research team reportedly does not consider the discovery to be a result of climate change. Rasch said the island has small, raised areas of soil and rocks. He said it may be the result of a major storm that, with the help of the sea, slowly pushed material from the seabed together until an island formed. "The island is not expected to exist a long time," Danish researchers believe. "No one knows how long it will remain. It could disappear as soon as a powerful new storm hits," Rasch said. I'm John Russell.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Ahmad in Suriname. He asks, can you start a sentence with because or and? Hello, Ahmad. Earlier this year, on Ask a Teacher, we answered a reader who asked if sentences can begin with and. The answer is yes. You can find the full answer on that program, which ran on January 8th. Today, let's talk about because. The word because is a conjunction that means for the reason that. A conjunction is a word that joins other words or groups of words in a sentence. To answer your question, yes, you can start a sentence with because. However, to be a complete sentence, it must express a complete thought. Here are some examples of complete sentences beginning with because.
Because I was happy, I smiled.
Because of the severe storm, my internet went down.
Notice the punctuation marks. There are commas in the middle of the sentences and periods at the end. When we start complete sentences with because, this is how we punctuate them. By themselves, because I was happy and because of the severe storm are not complete sentences. But that does not mean they are not acceptable. In English, we begin many answers to questions in speaking and informal writing with the word because. For example, suppose you are answering a friend's text message. Listen to this question and the answer.
Why did you smile?
Because I was happy.
Or imagine your coworker is asking about your internet.
Why did your internet go down?
Because of the storm.
Notice that I did not put a period after the responses that began with because. They are not full sentences. But in informal writing, such as texts or informal emails, some English speakers do put periods after incomplete sentences. And that's Ask a Teacher for this week. To learn more about starting sentences with because, look for stories on adverb clauses in the series Everyday Grammar. I'm Alice Bryant.
After 20 years, the cop moved along the street looking strong and important. This was the way he always moved. He was not thinking of how he looked. There were few people on the street to see him. It was only about 10 at night, but it was cold, and there was a wind with a little rain in it. He stopped at doors as he walked along, trying each door to be sure that it was closed for the night. Now and then he turned and looked up and down the street. He was a fine-looking cop, watchful, guarding the peace. People in this part of the city went home early. Now and then you might see the lights of a shop or a small restaurant, but most of the doors belonged to business places that had been closed hours ago. Then the cop suddenly slowed his walk. Near the door of a darkened shop, a man was standing. As the cop walked toward him, the man spoke quickly.
"It's all right, officer," he said. "I'm waiting for a friend. 20 years ago, we agreed to meet here tonight. It sounds strange to you, doesn't it? I'll explain if you want to be sure that everything's all right. About 20 years ago, there was a restaurant here where this shop stands, Big Joe Brady's Restaurant. It was here until 5 years ago," said the cop.
The man near the door had a colorless, square face with bright eyes and a little white mark near his right eye.
He had a large jewel in his necktie. 20 years ago tonight, said the man, I had dinner here with Jimmy Welch. He was my best friend and the best fellow in the world. He and I grew up together here in New York, like two brothers. I was 18 and Jimmy was 20. The next morning, I was to start for the West. I was going to find a job and make a great success. You couldn't have pulled Jimmy out of New York. He thought it was the only place on earth. We agreed that night that we would meet here again in 20 years. We thought that in 20 years we would know what kind of men we were and what future waited for us. It sounds interesting, said the cop. A long time between meetings, it seems to me. Have you heard from your friend since you went west? Yes, for a time we did write to each other, said the man. But after a year or two, we stopped. The West is big. I moved around everywhere, and I move quickly. But I know that Jimmy will meet me here if he can. He was as true as any man in the world. He'll never forget. I came 1,000 miles to stand here tonight, but I'll be glad about that if my old friend comes too. The man waiting took out a fine watch covered with small jewels. 3 minutes before 10, he said. It was 10 that night when we said goodbye here at the restaurant door. You were successful in the West, weren't you? Asked the cop. I surely was. I hope Jimmy has done half as well. He was a slow mover. I've had to fight for my success. In New York, a man doesn't change much. In the West, you learn how to fight for what you get. The cop took a step or two. I'll go on my way, he said. I hope your friend comes all right. If he isn't here at 10, are you going to leave? I am not, said the other. I'll wait 30 minutes at least. If Jimmy is alive on this earth, he'll be here by that time. Good night, officer. Good night, said the cop and walked away, trying doors as he went. There was now a cold rain falling and the wind was stronger. The few people walking along that street were hurrying, trying to keep warm. At the door of the shop stood the man who had come 1,000 miles to meet a friend. Such a meeting could not be certain, but he waited. About 20 minutes he waited, and then a tall man in a long coat came hurrying across the street. He went directly to the waiting man.
Is that you, Bob?
He asked doubtfully.
Is that you, Jimmy Welch? Cried the man at the door.
The new man took the other man's hand in his.
It's Bob! It surely is! I was certain I would find you here if you were still alive. 20 years is a long time. The old restaurant is gone, Bob. I wish it were here, so that we could have another dinner in it. Has the West been good to you?
They gave me everything I asked for. You've changed, Jimmy. I never thought you were so tall.
Oh, I grew a little after I was 20.
Are you doing well in New York, Jimmy?
Well enough. I work for the city. Come on, Bob. We'll go to a place I know and have a good long talk about old times.
The two men started along the street arm in arm. The man from the West was beginning to tell the story of his life. The other, with his coat up to his ears, listened with interest. At the corner stood a shop bright with electric lights. When they came near, each turned to look at the other's face. The man from the West stopped suddenly and pulled his arm away.
You're not Jimmy Welch, he said. 20 years is a long time, but not long enough to change the shape of a man's nose. It sometimes changes a good man into a bad one, said the tall man. You've been under arrest for 10 minutes, Bob. Chicago cops thought you might be coming to New York. They told us to watch for you. Are you coming with me quietly? That's wise. But first, here's something I was asked to give you. You may read it here at the window. It's from a cop named Welch.
The man from the West opened the little piece of paper. His hand began to shake a little as he read.
Bob, I was at the place on time. I saw the face of the man wanted by Chicago cops. I didn't want to arrest you myself. So I went and got another cop and sent him to do the job. Jimmy.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm